So it's always nice to have someone from Maryland. Mixed methods research in tobacco control with youth and young adults, a systematic review. Dr. Fryer.
Thank you. Sorry about that. When you're 6'3". Good afternoon. I'm actually impressed with the number of people who would come out during lunchtime to talk about methods and methodological development. So, yes, yeah, and somewhat everybody's embracing their inner nerd. That's what I really appreciate. I am Craig Fryer. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Behavioral and Community Health and one of the associate directors in our Maryland Center for Health Equity at the University of Maryland College Park. And I want to talk with you briefly about both the process and some results taking on this initiative of conducting a systematic review. How many of you in the room have ever done a systematic review? Anyone? Takes a while. I shouldn't say a while. Takes a long time. And you have to be extremely detailed and very critical of yourself and your processes in that regard. And I want to say a little bit about what that was like for me and what I found. Myself and my co-authors don't have any personal financial interest to disclose. So when we think about tobacco and tobacco use, not only in the U.S. but globally, we have an understanding that it is, you know, the most preventable disease among humans, right? And I'm particularly interested in tobacco-related health disparities among youth and young adult populations. And we also know that that behavior is very complex, very nuanced, and poorly understood. We are making strides, right? Many attempts to do so, but we don't know a whole lot about tobacco-related health disparities in that regard. And so there is a need for some innovative methods as it relates to trying to address these very complex issues among young people. I offer that mixed methods research designs may be one approach in which we can do that. Right, thinking of it as the third research paradigm in connection with quantitative methods and also qualitative methods. So when we say mixed methods research designs, I'm really talking about not just the use of a qualitative and a quantitative method, but the integration of those, right? How do they complement one another, and what do we get that is different from that combined analysis and integration versus just the use of one of those other methods individually? We also know that in the behavioral health sciences, mixed methods use is increasing. But what I was very interested in is how is mixed methods research design being used in tobacco control, my area of interest, particularly when we're talking about young people. So that was our research purpose, and we wanted to examine this in a way that would allow us to say something about what current strategies were. To do that, we had three very simple research questions. So what are the approaches? What are the mixed methods design approaches that are being used? What are the topics that investigators are trying to address? And what is very important to me is how are they engaging young people in their research studies, particularly when we talk about this very important issue of having diverse research study samples. So we have four main definitions that sort of shaped our conceptual framework for this study. Again, our definition of youth, our definition of young adults, definition of nicotine and tobacco research was broad because we wanted to be as inclusive as possible. And we used the definition of mixed methods research design that comes from Questwell and Plano Clark when it's really about the involvement of the collection, the analysis, and the integration of both quant and qual data within a single study or multi-phases of a program of research. So how do we do this? Many of you that have done this before, we use PubMed as a way to look at the empirical published literature. And we had we started this in January of 2014, so we wanted to look at the last 10 years, so 2004 to 2013. And we used this four-step process many of you are familiar with, identification, screening, eligibility, and inclusion as it related to the actual articles that were selected for the study sample. But tobacco control research can actually be published in a whole host of journals, which is a great thing, right, for those of us who do that work. And so what we try to do as a way to think very systematically about our process is how do we hone in on where that work will, more focused work will be done. And so I solicited six nationally known experts in the field individuals that are much more senior than me as a way to think of what would be those top five journals as a way to think about this. I'm not the first person to do this. This has been done in systematic reviews in other fields often before. So when we think about the first two processes of this four-step process and we look at identification, when we came up with our search strategy, that initial search strategy yielded 5142 records. And then when we applied the 10-year range that we were interested in, it reduced it to 3170. So that was just the initial look at titles in that regard. Then we took those 3,170 titles and abstracts, and we had a primary person who assessed all of them. We then sent 5%, or 158 of those, same individual titles and abstracts, to a second person, and wound up with 100 agreement between the two reviewers. From that analysis, using those four different definitions that I shared with you, we had an N of 37 articles that fit our criteria at this point. As we move toward eligibility, we then pulled the four articles from those 37 studies, and all four members of our research team reviewed all 37. 16 of them were excluded because they didn't meet our criterion of mixed methods research, which then left us with a final study sample of 21. So the few results that I'll share with you today after I talk about this methodology is really about these 21 studies. This is just a figure of our methodology. I know you can't see it, but it just helps to illustrate these four-step process of identification through inclusion. So we then, using a random generated number computer program, gave random numbers to each of the articles. We then randomly assigned them to one of two primary reviewers. And the primary reviewer was asked to assess them in coding on seven major features using a standardized protocol. I'll show you what that looked like in a second. Then a secondary reviewer was asked to do the same process on the same particular article. Consensus was then reached between those two individuals. If it was not, then the full team, all four reviewers, had to come to 100% agreement and resolve that particular issue. So this is an example of what our coding protocol looked like. Here, what you see are two of the potential features we were looking at. One is substantive content. So we were looking at what were the discipline of the investigators who were doing this work, what was the main tobacco control topic, what was the purpose of this particular study, what was the population and the setting, and did they focus on a particular tobacco product. Also, we then looked at the quantitative component. So what were they doing quantitatively using those methods? What were they doing qualitatively and the like? I'm going to give you some brief results and talk a little bit more about what we found. So tobacco control, as I mentioned before, there's a range of individuals from a range of disciplines doing this work. The behavioral sciences was the most common. About 12 of those studies came from the behavioral sciences. In this case, we're talking about anthro, psych, and public health, but also included individuals who came from medicine, marketing, and statistics when we think about the broad range of tobacco control work. Topical areas are no surprise to you, things that we already know about. Almost half were prevention interventions or perceptions of smokers in tobacco products. And then we think about cessation being two of those 21s. And then we had a very interesting article that was actually looking at the reliability and validity of self-reported data, which is really critical in tobacco control. One of the things that I was very interested in is where was this work being conducted? Just from this small sample of 21 articles representing scientists from five different countries, the majority from the U.S., then followed by those in the U.K., but we also had examples coming from India, Israel, and New Zealand. We think about the breadth of this work. So from a mixed methods perspective, what did we find? For those who don't know, mixed methods research has what we would consider to be traditional research designs that have been named and defined in the literature. Concurrent design was the most common one found among this particular group of articles. Now, I will be the first to tell you that very few individuals, very few of the investigators described their work using traditional mixed methods research design. They did not say, I'm using sequential explanatory mixed methods research design, or I'm using the concurrent blah, 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 right? So language, and I'll talk about this later as we think about some of the problems we faced in a systematic review, the mixed methods research field language is not being used in tobacco control as people are describing their work in that regard. So the concurrent mixed methods research design, and it's denoted using QAN plus QAL, as you see in those parentheses there, means that the data for each of those strands was collected concurrently, hence the term concurrent, right? But each strand is given equal priority, so you can have a mixed methods research design where one of those strands is giving more priority than the other. And then the results are merged finally during analysis in this regard. So it was the most common. So if they were not using that language, how do we do this? This was our assessment of what they were doing, even if they didn't describe it that way. So we were taking their work and then placing them within, right, the traditional mixed methods research designs that we know of. So as I mentioned to you before, terminology was actually quite an issue. There were six of the investigators or authors of these studies described their work as mixed methods, but did not talk about a mixed methods research design at all, right? So this is what we find often when you have something that's submerging in a research enterprise, but individuals are not quite sure what to do with it. So let me give you a quick analogy. One analogy we could use is CBPR, right? So when we think about the emergence of community-based participatory research, there were individuals saying, oh, I do CBPR, and then if you ask them to describe it, they either couldn't describe it, or when they described it, they actually weren't doing CBPR, right? So we do that often as a way to communicate to reviewers or to readers of our articles to get them to understand what we're doing, even if we're not quite doing it. This is what we found here as well, and which I think is very interesting. And then somewhat unfortunately, as it related to recruitment, and I would plead for all of you all who write empirical literature, please tell us what you really did to recruit your study participants, right?
Make your work.
We literally did not have enough information to assess it. So often what we do, and what is actually quite common, is we'll talk about the setting. So you'll say you recruited young people through the school, but you don't tell us how you did that. And in mixed methods research, what is even more important is that we are very interested in how did you recruit when you look at each strand of your study. So for your quantitative methods, how did you recruit? And for your qualitative methods, because they can look very different and have different implications for the work. So for a quick discussion, I want to talk about my excitement, right, that mixed methods was actually being utilized even when investigators didn't know that they were doing so. But we found a lot of both unevenness and inconsistency in their reporting or their description of their work. Part of that was this lack of common terminology. So the terminology that is used in mixed methods research, those who do that work, is not being used in tobacco control, right? It has not, in this case, diffused into the field in that regard. And so we have to think about how do we then use that common terminology. This was one of the problems of our initial search, which is one of the reasons why we focused on the top five selected journals. Because, you know, when you're doing a systematic review, whatever your search strategy is has to be replicable. Well, if you're not using common terminology, that then makes your search much more complex. The second point is this lack of information, as I've already shared, right? So we know that journals have limitations as it relates to the amount of words you can use to describe your study. What I'm asking you to do is to think about multiple articles. You should be writing recruitment articles separate from your baseline data articles so that we can all have a better understanding of how we do a better job of recruiting diverse samples in research. And then, of course, lack of clear explanations of mixed methods research procedures. So in mixed methods, you have a rationale for why you're using mixed methods, when you're going to time both your QAN and QAL strand, and why you want to integrate them. And none of that was found in this particular systematic review. Our recommendations, though, are encouraging. We were encouraged by what we found. And what we would like to offer is that individuals take more advantage of the strength of mixed methods research design. They are really set up so that you can see the complementary strengths of both QAN and QAL methods. There are also a host of mixed method research design resources that are available, much more than when I first started doing this work. about 5 years ago. This work is part of a KO1 award that I have through the National Cancer Institute in my use of mixed methods research. But there are online courses, there are published manuscripts, there are books on how do you, in this particular case, report your work in mixed methods research. And particularly, I want to highlight one that's called Grams. O'Kethane et al. In 2008 wrote an article called Good Reporting of a Mixed Methods Study, where it really lines out the rationale, design, and integration of mixing as a way to think about how do we report this very important work. These 21 studies were critically important work. And if we don't have the ability to clearly communicate that to those who are reading it, then we are shortchanging not only the time and energy of ourselves, but those individuals who participated in our research studies. I want to acknowledge my team, one of whom is here, Elizabeth Seaman. Elizabeth, raise your hand real quick. Elizabeth is the primary reviewer, so a lot of that work fell on her initially. Rachel Clark and Dr. Vicki Plano Clark are at the University of Cincinnati in the School of Education. And I have another doctoral student who did a fantastic job of providing feedback to me as it related to clarity. Always ask someone who's not in mixed methods research to either read something that I've written or hear me say something to make sure that it is clear. Thank you.